KQED News, I'm Rachel Vasquez. A new initiative allows the San Francisco Fire Department to treat people experiencing opioid withdrawal symptoms in the field. KQED's Azul Dahlstrom-Ekman reports.
Previously, emergency medical services would have to wait until a patient was taken to a hospital to administer the drug buprenorphine. City officials say it helps reduce withdrawals and cravings, and along with methadone, is the most effective treatment for opioid use disorder, cutting the risk of overdose deaths in half. The move comes after President Joe Biden relaxed controls on the drug last year. Expanding access to buprenorphine is part of the City Overdose Prevention Plan, which aims to reduce fentanyl and other drug-related deaths and increase access to treatments for opioid use disorder. San Francisco recorded 620 accidental overdose deaths in 2022, nearly three-quarters of which were attributed to fentanyl. I'm Azul Dahlstrom-Ekman, KQED News.
The executive director of the San Jose Police Officers Association, who was arrested on federal drug trafficking charges, pleaded not guilty in federal court yesterday. That's according to the SF Standard. The Justice Department alleges that Joanne Marianne Segovia used office resources to order thousands of opioids, including fentanyl, to her house from addresses in China and India. She then allegedly shipped the drugs to other parts of the U.S. If convicted, she could face up to 20 years in prison. I'm Rachel Vasquez, KQED News.
Amy Finkelstein wrote her new book, Risky Business, with two other economists, Liran Inav from Stanford and Ray Fissman from Boston University. Finkelstein says her love affair with insurance, her words, began when she was a junior staffer on the Council of Economic Advisers.
It was in 1997, 1998, during the Clinton administration, and Janet Yellen was the chair. One of the really fun things about the Council of Economic Advisers is it's quite small. You know, there's 20, 30 people there, but it has the same scope of things it needs to advise the president on as the Treasury Department, which has tens of thousands of employees. So if you're a, you know, eager young staffer with no life, and I qualified on all those dimensions, you get to work on all kinds of things. When I looked back at what were the things that really excited me, I had gotten to work on natural disaster insurance, on automobile insurance, on unemployment insurance. The common denominator, it turned out, was insurance.
From there, Finkelstein got her PhD in economics from MIT. She has since won major awards for her research, most of which is about health insurance. If her name or voice sound familiar, you may remember a Freakonomics Radio episode from 2015 called How Do We Know What Really Works in Healthcare? Now I asked Finkelstein to name her favorite kind of insurance, or perhaps the most unusual type she's come across.
They're pretty idiosyncratic. So Lloyd's of London makes a lot of money doing sort of boutique insurance. Betty Grable in the 1930s wanted to insure her legs. The lead singer of Kiss insured his remarkably elongated tongue. There was space satellite insurance several years before the first moon landing. So I find those types of boutique insurances quite fun and funny.
And if Amy Finkelstein were to take out a boutique insurance policy that only Lloyd's could underwrite, what would it be?
I always worry I'm going to lose either my sense of humor or my ability to write economics papers, or maybe the two go hand in hand. When people stop finding me funny, I'd like a big payout. Now, perhaps that day has already come, so I can't buy the insurance.
How many types of insurance do you have?
I have health insurance. I have life insurance. It's on my to-do list to buy long-term care insurance. I have auto insurance and I have homeowner's insurance.
Okay, that's it.
I believe so.
You don't have any umbrella or excess liability?
I have an umbrella policy.
Do you also have perhaps some forms of insurance that are kind of automatic that you don't even think about? Any unemployment, disability?
well, we all have government-provided unemployment insurance. Through my employer, MIT, I also get additional disability insurance.
How about Social Security insurance?
Yep, we all get that.
Medicare?
I'll have it, but I'm not that old yet.
Right, but you're paying into it now.
For sure.
So really, you started by naming maybe 5 or 6, and it got us to 8 or 9. Do you have a pet and or pet insurance?
We have 2 guinea pigs and a gecko, but no insurance for them. My co-author, Laurent, has a dog and didn't buy pet insurance at first because it's so expensively priced, precisely because it's priced for the people who are planning to get a lot of care. When he discovered when their dog got ill, just how much his wife was willing to spend to try to save the dog, he thought maybe we should get insurance. But because the dog now had a pre-existing condition, the insurer wouldn't let them.
So insurance is one of those topics that makes the average person's eyes just glaze over. Did you used to be like that before you fell in love with insurance?
Probably, yes, because I fell in love with it for a very particular reason. The sort of cartoon version of economics is the magic of the markets, Adam Smith's Invisible Hand. And of course, most people realize that's a little extreme and cartoonish. We understand that monopoly firms can set exorbitant prices. There can be bank runs. Polluting firms can pollute. And we have government policies to deal with all of those. But one thing I hadn't realized till I started working in economics is there's another type of market frailty that's really important, that's the subject of a lot of government policy, but that most people just don't seem to be as aware of. And that's the problem of selection. And it's front and center in insurance markets.
Okay, let's define some terms here. When economists talk about selection, they are inviting us to look beneath the surface of a given data set to see how the data were put together or selected. And just as important, to see what was left out. Imagine you are an attorney defending a securities firm accused of fleecing its investors. You might like to select an entire jury made up only of securities firm CEOs. The prosecutor, meanwhile, might like to stack the jury with small-time investors. The job of the judge and the judicial system is to make the jury pool more representative of the